Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, on this 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination, we'll take calls later from people who remember President Kennedy and people who don't. How did the assassination change you or the country if you were alive then? And what do you think of the Kennedy legacy, the JFK mystique, if you weren't? Civil rights historian Peniel Joseph and veteran TV newsman Marvin Kalb will be our guests with your calls. And your holiday shopping gift for kids under seven with gender in mind. How do you take gender into account when deciding what to buy for a small child? We'll take your calls on that later in the program. But first, you can say goodbye to the thing that brought us moments like this. Be honest, are you going to miss it?
I will speak as long as it takes until the alarm is sounded from coast to coast.
The point isn't that anybody in our country is Hitler.
I rise today for the principle.
As I mentioned, Hayek said that this is what distinguishes us.
They say Lewis Carroll is fiction.
But I've discovered that there are some limits to filibustering, and I'm going to have to go take care of one of those in a few minutes here.
Yeah, I guess so. Senator Rand Paul, in his famous 13-hour filibuster, the nomination of John Brennan for CIA chief, that filibuster is a thing of the past because yesterday Senate Democrats finally detonated the so-called nuclear option after thinking about it for years. It's a Senate rules change, if you haven't heard, that bans filibusters for executive-level appointments and judicial nominees except for the Supreme Court. It will now take just 51 votes, not 60, to approve these appointments, a 9-vote swing that makes all the difference in the current and hyperpartisan Senate. Why is it such a big deal as to earn that atomic nickname? Republican Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee.
This action by the Democratic majority today is the most important and most dangerous restructuring of the rules of the United States Senate since Thomas Jefferson wrote the rules at the founding of our country. This action today creates a perpetual opportunity for the tyranny of the majority because it permits a majority in this body to do whatever it wants to do anytime it wants to do it.
Senator Lamar Alexander with the Republican view on the nuclear option. So what will the political fallout be? What will the implications be for policy and the law? Will the dozens of unconfirmed nominees bottled up by the Republican minority now sail through? And why do this right now in the middle of the Affordable Care Act rollout crisis and just before a big Senate election year in which the Democrats could become the minority? Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill, is here to discuss. Bob, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
You know, now that Rand Paul-style filibusters are over, what will C-SPAN air in the middle of the night?
This is a significant change. It's going to have a huge effect both policy-wise and politically. Obviously, the parties have been at odds with one another, and Reid didn't want to do this. He refused to do it, basically. He spoke out against it when Republicans were thinking about doing it in 2005. So the relationship between Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, really is not good, and it used to be a pretty solid relationship. So this has major effects as far as nominations going forward. The White House doesn't have to think about filibusters. They don't have to think about a controversial nomination as long as they get most of the Democrats to vote yes. So whether that means EPA or the Labor Department, various agencies, this is a big deal, and Republicans, obviously, as you played from Lamar Alexander, very upset. They can't do anything about it.
They can't do anything about it right now. So why didn't they go further? I mean, Harry Reid didn't go all the way to banning filibusters on, say, regular bills, which would have been maybe the super-duper H-bomb option. This is just about executive-level appointments, cabinet secretaries and so forth, and judicial nominations other than for the Supreme Court. Why draw the line right there?
The key reason is he didn't have the votes, and he doesn't have the votes right now to do that. And it was very difficult for him to get the votes just to do this. A few weeks ago, many on the left who really closely tracked this told us that he didn't have the vote. So this month he's really leaned on some senators, including Dianne Feinstein, who was a no. He got her to yes. There were still some three defections on the vote yesterday, but he got the votes. I don't think he's going to pursue that because I don't think he could get the votes, honestly, to do that. It was so tough for him to get the votes here, and when he made the push, he got the votes.
What flipped Feinstein?
She said that basically she's the partisanship over the last few months, obviously with the government shutdown, all played a factor. But she was, you know, a year ago, she was adamantly against it. Max Baucus, who voted with Reid, was very much on the fence. He voted yes. So what Reid and the Democrats are banking on is that people are so tired of the gridlock that they're going to approve. They like this move. But on the other hand, people are also tired of partisanship, and this is a partisan move. So they're banking that people want to get stuff done, but risk, obviously, this was a partisan move, and there could be a backlash on it. But once Reid decided he was going to go to the floor, a lot of senators didn't think he had the votes, but he had them.
So it's a partisan move in response to partisan moves from the other side. It's kind of an eye for an eye, if you want to look at it that way. Listeners, if you go to our show page, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, you'll see a photo that we have there of Senator Schumer at a podium with Harry Reid in the shot, and I think that's Dick Durbin, the number two in the Senate, and Patty Murray. And they've got a chart that they're displaying, filibusters on executive nominees. So during the Eisenhower administration, the number of filibusters on executive nominees, do you know the answer, Bob?
I do not.
Zero.
Zero. Wow.
Under JFK, zero. Johnson, zero. Nixon, zero. Ford, zero. Under Carter, two. Under Reagan, two. Under Bush, zero. Under Clinton, nine. Then under the second Bush, seven. Under Obama, 27 in his first term, 45 in his second term. That's what they're reacting to.
Yeah, and that's a compelling case. Another thing to watch, I think, on this is, remember, President Obama hasn't gotten much of anything done through Congress. He's basically gone 0 for 2013. Now, you can blame that on the GOP-led House. They haven't moved on immigration, but regardless, Obama hasn't achieved a lot. But he's going to do a lot of stuff through executive action, through regulations like climate change. And what's going to happen? Well, those regulations are going to be sued. And where are they going to end up? At the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And these were the three nominations yesterday that got approved. And this tilts the court to the left. So therefore, a better shot of Obama's administrative actions, regulations, standing up in that D.C. court.
And we have another chart on our site, courtesy of the Washington Post, of the showing the greater use of the filibuster in recent years on things in general. And you'll see, if you look at that chart, that starting in around 05, it really, really spikes and continues on, which could indicate that both they're doing it to presidents of both parties, because that was during the Bush administration. All right, Bob Cusack from The Hill. Here's a little test for you. Of the famous filibusters in history, we have a little list here of maybe the most famous filibusters in history. This may be accurate or not accurate as a list, but, you know, if we ask our listeners to tick off filibusters you know of, it might be this list. Only Rand Paul's wouldn't have been allowed under the new rules, because he was filibustering a CIA director nominee. Ted Cruz, the famous recent Ted Cruz, why would that still be allowed?
Because that technically was not a filibuster. I remember when Cruz launched his crusade earlier this fall, it wasn't technically a filibuster. Is that the right answer?
That is. That's why it was nicknamed the faux-libuster.
Right.
And in 1983, that was, of course, when Cruz was trying to stop Obamacare from taking effect as the government shutdown was looming. In 1983, Jesse Helms filibustered to block Martin Luther King Day from being a holiday. Would not have been blocked. That filibuster, even under these rules, would have gone on. Because?
it's not a nomination.
Exactly. Similarly, Strom Thurmond famously filibustered the Civil Rights Act for 24 hours and 18 minutes in 1957 in his Strong Bladder days. And from the fictional side, maybe the most famous filibuster of all time is a fictional filibuster, Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
What was he filibustering? Here's some movie history trivia. Jimmy Stewart, what was his character filibustering in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? Any idea?
Oh, wow. I love that movie, but I can't remember what it was he was filibustering.
It was an appropriations bill.
Really?
How boring is that, right?
That's pretty boring. The movie was great, but that sounds pretty boring.
I mean, it
they
all
made it interesting.
Tied into, you know, themes of Christmas and love and community and everything else, but it was an appropriations bill. So there you go.
But now, it's interesting what you say about the timing, because it has changed the conversation from Obamacare and the rollout.
Right. And is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Democrats? Does this increase or decrease their likelihood of maintaining the Senate majority, which they now even more desperately need now that they changed the rules?
Yeah, I mean, I in the short term, it's a good thing for Democrats because we're not talking about Obamacare, and that has just been dominating the news cycles for so long, really since the shutdown ended. In the long term, I don't think it's going to be a huge voter thing in 2014. I just think they're going to be, whether it's Obamacare or the economy, that's going to be leading issues. But you saw some trepidation. Mark Pryor, a Democrat who is the most vulnerable Senate Democrat from Arkansas, he voted with the Republicans on this, along with Carl Levin and Joe Manchin. Neither of those two are up for re-election. Manchin is more of a conservative Democrat, though. So Pryor clearly.
But Carl Levin, who I thought was a pretty liberal Democrat, is retiring, so he could do whatever he wants, right?
That's right. He's retiring, and if he were to run again, he would have easily won. He just had, from an institutional standpoint, he had a problem with it. We have a story up now on thehill.com where basically Levin was trying to come up with alternatives instead of doing this, and the Democrats said, "No, thank you. We've tried everything. We've met in the old upper chamber, old Senate chamber, and we tried to have a bipartisan talk. We're not doing that again. We're moving forward on this." And Reid, in the Tuesday meeting with Senate Democrats' weekly meeting, he made a very impassioned plea for this, and that's where he nailed down the votes.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about the Democrats finally detonating the so-called nuclear option to change the filibuster rules. No more filibusters of presidential nominees other than to the Supreme Court. We're talking about it with Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill. And Russ in West Windsor has a theory as to why the Democrats pulled the trigger now. Hi, Russ.
Hi. I think it was a preemptive nuclear option because the Democrats probably believed that in the future, if there were a Republican president and the Democratic Senate was returning the favor and filibustering at every opportunity the appointees of the Republicans, that the Republicans would have suddenly flipped and themselves passed the nuclear option, just as I recall not that many years ago when Mitch McConnell swore that if they removed limits on campaign spending, that he would be all for transparency in revealing donors. And suddenly, when the Citizens United occurred and the Democrats said, okay, well, let's pass laws that, right, obligate the donors to reveal themselves, he blocked every single one. And he continued.
And suddenly,
to do
so. We have to protect the privacy of our donors so they're not subject to retaliation for giving us money.
They knew they would do the same thing if the situation were reversed.
Russ, thank you very much. Bob, do you buy that timing theory?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting theory because, I mean, the bottom line is for Republicans here is they're going to whine for a while, but, you know, they have to, if they win the next election, okay, the Republican president's going to have, he's going to be able to nominate conservative judges, and,
right,
and that's what the right loves. So they have to win elections. Obviously, they didn't win last time, and the Democrats are now going for three in a row.
Right. It's really more presidential power. If you take all the partisan stuff out of it, what this is more presidential power, less Senate power, more
absolutely
majority power, and less minority power.
Absolutely. And over the decades, whether it's a Republican administration or a Democratic administration, we have seen the congressional branch, legislative branch, basically a lot of power has been taken away and taken by the executive branch. And the only time I've actually seen in recent years where the legislative branch, Congress, pushed back at the person in the White House was on the Syria vote. Remember, Obama called for Congress to approve that, and then he realized he didn't have the votes. That was one of the few times that the legislative branch basically trumped the executive branch in recent history.
So I've seen two almost opposite predictions about what comes next in terms of what kinds of judicial nominees. Lots of people are saying, since it's all about party lines, we're going to see more and more radical nominees in either direction, right or left, depending on the president. Then the other analysis is that it really does all hinge on a couple of moderates in the middle, so nominations will be even more laser-targeted at getting their votes. What do you think will be the effect on the type of nominees if you only need 51 confirmation votes in the Senate for these judges?
I think it's more the former, where it's going to be more liberal and conservative nominees, depending on who's in the White House. But they do have to be concerned with the centrist in the middle. So they will have an enormous amount of power, and I imagine also they're going to be saying publicly and privately, this White House, the Democrats, the conservative Democrats, certainly up for re-election, are going to say, hey, don't go crazy here. We want to have not extreme candidates. So they are going to have some power, but also going to be in tough spots because the left is now going to be pushing very hard the president to nominate more liberal judges because they clearly have the votes. Remember, Democrats also have 55 votes here, and now that could be reduced. Maybe Democrats lose control of the Senate if the Obamacare rollout continues to be the disaster that it is. But at the time, they have 55, so they could lose five Democrats and then have Biden be the tiebreaker, and they got it.
Jim in Morris Township, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Was wondering how this vote could pass without a filibuster, because I had thought that the only time you could change the rules without a filibuster was in the initial days of a session or of a new Congress when the rules were being adopted, that they could be adopted without a filibuster, without the 60% vote.
Right. And Jim, I'm going to leave it there. But his question, to me, this question, if there's humor in this situation, Bob, this is the most hilarious part of it, that in order to change the vote, in order to change the rule that requires 60 votes to get mm-hmm. these nominees through, you only need 51 votes.
Yeah, that's right. And that was assumed really for years. And even Reid acknowledged that in the last Congress that he should have done it in the beginning of the previous Congress. Then they didn't do it at the beginning of this Congress.
But why didn't the rules allow people to filibuster this if it can filibuster? If the Senate members can filibuster almost anything else the Senate votes on.
If you're the majority leader and you have the support of the Senate parliamentarian, you can do a lot of things. And that's basically what Reid was making the case. I can change the rules at any time with a majority vote. So, and the Republicans obviously ejected, but Reid is the majority leader and had the support of the parliamentarian, so therefore he was able to do it. And that is funny. They couldn't filibuster.
We played Lamar Alexander's reaction to the change. Other Republicans compared it to socialism, of course, and warned of military coups. Representative Steve Stockman even referred to the moment in the Bible where the crowd gathered around Jesus as he was set to be crucified, given the option to free either Jesus or Barabbas, and chose Barabbas. We looked it up, by the way, and the Bible does not refer to whether the decision was by a 51 or 60 vote majority of the crowd.
I tell you, one other thing on the legislation, because a lot of conservatives fear that is the next step, that this is only an incremental step, and then they're going to do legislation if we could get the votes. But the problem with that theory is that the Republicans control the House, and they're not going to move. They haven't moved a lot of things that have passed the Senate. So unless the House flips and one party is in control of both chambers and the White House, I don't think that's going to be seriously discussed.
And in a press release, John Thune, Republican from South Dakota, said Senate Democrats are desperate to talk about anything other than the disastrous train wreck of Obamacare. And I think both right and left might say to that, duh, talk about the timing. And why shouldn't we see this as anything but an attempt to get a win or at least change the subject after weeks of terrible Obamacare news cycles?
Yeah, I mean, it's it's been a disaster. I mean, I haven't seen this type of a disaster politically. You got to go back to Social Security reform, certainly Hurricane Katrina for George W. Bush. So, you know, Harry Reid's been around a long time. He knows when his party is losing and losing big time. And he made huge news yesterday. And it's not coincidental that it happened now. I think clearly we're talking about this, and that's what they want us to be talking about. They want to, and also give the administration a bit of a breather to, you know, from their standpoint, really get this thing rolling and fix the website. So Harry Reid is a shrewd political animal, and he knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew the ramifications of it, and he knew this would be front page news, and he was right.
Before you go, let me just play a clip of President Obama supporting this yesterday and ask if you're also surprised about his tone here. Listen.
Over the past 5 years, we've seen an unprecedented pattern of obstruction in Congress that's prevented too much of the American people's business from getting done. All too often, we've seen a single senator or a handful of senators choose to abuse arcane procedural tactics to unilaterally block bipartisan compromises or to prevent well-qualified, patriotic Americans from filling critical positions of public service in our system of government.
So he was a little dry and wonky there, but it was very partisan. And yeah. I wonder if you were surprised that he didn't say something bigger picture, this constitutional lawyer turned president, like the rules of Congress have been amended many times over the years. This is an adjustment that's a long time in coming and will help bring, you know, constitutional balance, yada, yada. He basically just said the Republican, and remembering that he, as you said, opposed this when he was in the Senate and Bush was president, he basically said, hey, the Republicans are sticking it to us. We're going to stick it back.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically in the election year. I mean, President Obama has never had great relationships with Congress, including Democrats, but certainly with not with Republicans. So he tried a charm offensive this year, had dinner with a lot of senators. You know, Mitch McConnell was never at those dinners, and I think that speech was directly aimed at Mitch McConnell, and there would be nothing that would the White House would want more than Mitch McConnell to lose re-election. Remember, McConnell was the one who said his number one goal was to take President Obama out so that he wouldn't get re-elected. So I think that was really directed at Mitch McConnell, and also that he's done trying to work with Republicans. From his standpoint, he's tried repeatedly and constantly rebuffed, and now immigration reform is basically done. He couldn't get gun control through. So I think there's a lot of frustration there. And, you know, but it's a victory for his party that they were able to do this and get the vote. So I think he was kind of spiking the football a little bit there.
Mitch McConnell was invited to dinner at the White House, but he had other plans?
Yeah, those two have never gotten along. And when we interviewed Mitch McConnell in the first Obama term, when the first couple years when they passed the Affordable Care Act, Mitch McConnell said, well, you know, the president called me. And he said, I didn't blame him because he didn't need me. He had the votes. But there has just – that's been one of the coldest relationships that I've seen since I've been in Washington. I mean, Speaker Boehner and Obama, they've had a decent relationship. They golfed once. Now it's a bit frosty. But the McConnell-Obama relationship has constantly been very, very cold.
Another notable filibuster from fictional history provided by one of our listeners on our comments page from the West Wing. Filibuster over the health care bill in the series. That filibuster would still be allowed under the new rules. We thank Bob Cusack from The Hill, which, of course, covers Capitol Hill. Bob, thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And up next, you know how President Obama always says he's going to get troops out of Afghanistan by 2014? Well, the new plan is apparently to keep troops in Afghanistan until 2024, at least some. Stay with us.